let's take a look at the Mishnah here, the second Mishnah on the bottom of Kufav Amud Beis. Actually, it's almost like the third Mishnah, because part of the Mishnah is on the top of the Amud. And we're talking about Meleches Tzeda, which I guess in English you'd call trapping. And the Mishnah says the following: Yoshev Ha'echad. So Reuven sits down ala Pesach. So you've got a deer that's inside a house, and Reuven sits down on the opening, the entranceway to the house, so that the deer cannot escape. But velo mil'uhu, but there's still part of the entranceway is still open, so that the deer could still escape. Yoshev Hasheni mil'uha, but Shimon comes along and he sits down on the other side of Reuven, completely sealing off the entranceway. Hasheni chai, and Shimon is now going to be chai because he's the one who completes the malacha and not Reuven. Yoshev Harishon ala Pesach umilo. Here's a more complicated case. Reuven actually fills up the entire entrance. Ba'asheni, now Shimon comes. The Yoshav Bitsido. And at this point, Shimon has done nothing. He didn't add or subtract anything. But Afal Pisha Omad Arishon V'Halachlo. Now Reuven packs out. And at this point, Shimon is the only one who's there. Is Harishon Chai Vasheni Potur. In other words, the Rishon, since he sat on the entrance and he closed off the entrance completely, he's Chai from Leches Tzeda. Now, it's true that when he packs out, it's really Shimon who's blocking the deer, and that's why the deer is trapped. But nevertheless, the Sheni didn't do anything. He was just simply passive. So you're only chayef for tzeda when you do an active act of closing off the exit of an animal. But here the sheni is potter because he didn't do anything. He was there at a time when he didn't add anything to the tzeda. It's only afterwards when the rishon left that he was just sitting there watching the tzvi. The tzvi was already captured by the first one. And this really, I'm trying to hear myself think. I don't know, there's a lot of noise there in the background. Anyway, yeah, but I just wanted to say this, that it's not enough to, in Metzius, you know, in reality, to be the one that's closing it there. You have to do some sort of an action, because all of Melechus Shabbos requires a kumvase as opposed to a shevi altas. Now the Mishnah says, why is the second one potur? What is it similar to? Noel espeso l'shomro. Let's say a person wants to lock his door on his way out. You know, he's got very expensive tapestries, or he has expensive utensils and so forth. So he wants to lock his door. V'nimtza tzvi shomer b'socho. And there's a tzvi inside the house. But he's not locking the door in order to trap the tzvi. He's locking the door because he wants to protect his belongings, you know, his expensive property. So I'm going to read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, Kasher tzvi nimtza bebayis. So the tzvi was already there, even before Shabbos. V'yoshev adam bebeiso umana minenu milehi malet. In other words, if a person sits at the entrance, locking the exit way from the animal, so the animal can't exit. Ubeshabbos hu chavetz aleches ledarko, but on Shabbos he wants to go somewhere else. He's not interested in sitting there the whole Shabbos. So now what he does is, he wants to lock his door. Now as a result of locking his door, the deer is going to be locked in his house. He's allowed to lock his door. Why? Because that's not called tzeda. the deer is already in his house from Erev Shabbos. What he's doing is, he's doing Shmira on his house. But the animal's already in the house. So the animal, for all intents and purposes, is what's called Nitzot. He's already captured. Now he's doing a Shmira on his house, and as a result of the Shmira on his house, the animal's not going to be able to get free. Here too, the animal is already Nitzot as a result of the fact that Reuven sat and closed the entire entrance. So once the animal is already Nitzot, then the second guy is just watching and protecting the house. He's not doing an act of tzedah, and therefore he's potter. All right, so let's see the Gemara here on Daf Kuf Zayin Omer Alf. Omer Rabbi Abba, Omer Abchia Bar Ashia Marav, Nichnas Halot Tzipar Tachas Knofov. A bird accidentally fell into his cloak. Right, it's underneath, so to speak, the wings of his cloak, and now the bird can't go out. Do you have to free the bird? He says, Yoshev u'meshamro ad shetechshach. He could keep exactly in the state that he's in without having to free the bird until Shabbos is over, because he hasn't done an act of tzedah. Now, this is a little bit complicated, because the truth is that in a certain sense he is doing tzedah in this case. I'll give you an example. In the laws of get, right, the Torah says v'nosam biyado, he has to deliver the get into our hands. And it could be that if she, let's say, keeps her hand very tight, and he pushes it into her fist, but in such a way that she clamps down her hands, and now he can't pull out the get, that's not considered v'nasam biyada. Here also, the very fact that he's holding on to his cloak and he's not letting the bird out, that's true, the bird landed there on its own volition, but if he's not allowing the bird to go out, that's considered like he's continuing or actively trapping the bird. So the chiddushi of Rabbi Abba is that it's different than the case of get. Because in the case of get, the only reason that the Baal was able to give her a tfisa, what we call a tfisa on the get, was because she was holding her hands clamped. And that means that she's considered to be actively participating in setting up the Nesina B'yada. Mashenkin here, once the bird gets under the, so to speak, wings of his cloak, at that point, he's not moving. He's not applying any pressure. He's not really holding on to the bird. All he's doing is he's deciding not to let the bird out. But he himself is passive from A to Z. He doesn't do anything active to trap the bird. And therefore he's allowed to remain in that state until after Shabbos is over. Again, he's not allowed to take the bird, because if he takes the bird, that would be an act of muktzah, because a bird is balei chayim, you're not allowed to touch muktzah. But if he's standing there just passively, and the bird is trapped in his cloak, then that's like the case in our Mishnah, where Shimon comes along, and when he sits down at the entrance into the house, he's doing nothing. And even though when Reuven packs out, Shimon is in effect doing the trapping, but he's totally passive. Here too, in Nichnas Olo Tachas Bgodo, he's totally passive. So that's the statement of Rabbi Abba. Now Rav Nachman is not happy about this. Mosiv Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Yoshav HaRishon Al Pesach Umilo. So the attack of Rav Nachman here from ambition is on a Darabonah level. Certainly on a Doraisa level, he would be allowed to stand there passively for the entire balance of Shabbos while the bird is trapped in his garment, in his cloak. That's not a problem. But the question is, is passive tzedah permissible on a Rabbanan level? See, the Rabbanan always worried that if they allow you to trap an animal or keep it trapped, shall we say, in a passive state, then he might come to actually trap it actively. So the Rabbanan are going to, Mishum Shvus, they're not going to allow you to trap the animal, even though you're doing it passively. So that's a Rabbanan. That's a Rabbanan. Now, in this case, when it says potter regarding the sheni, that means Shimon, when he remains exactly where he is passively, the Rabbanan are not going to allow that. They're going to require of him to pack his bags and let the tzvi go free. Why? Because he's continuing the process of tzedah, albeit passively. Well, there's a small gap between passive and active. If we allow him to do this passively today, then next Shabbos he might do it actively. Here too, if we allow him to keep holding the cloak in such a way that now this bird will remain trapped, that should be a violation of a Shvus d'Rabbanan. He should be part of a loss. And yet Rabbi Abba said, Yosef v'mishamro ad shetetcha. He's allowed to remain in that state until after Shabbos. So Gemara says, lo, no, you don't understand. The Mishnah didn't mean to say that Shimon has to pack his bags. He has to actively get up and leave the entranceway. But rather, this Mishnah means potter umutter. Now, that's an exception to our rule. Our rule is that whenever the Mishnah says potter, it means potter avalasur, and it's also in Rabbanan. But here, the word potter means potter umutter. And why is that so? So the Gemara says, because of the Seifa of this Mishnah. That's why we see that the word potter here means potu muta. Hachina mistabra midiktoni Seifa. It says in the Seifa of the Mishnah that the Sheni, who sits next to the Rishon, and he remains even after the Rishon leaves, is potur. So again, what we have here is Reuven sitting down. He is closing part of the area, correct? He's, just 1 second. It says, Yashav HaRishon al Pesach Umi Lahu. So the Rishon, meaning Reuven, is completely responsible for full-fledged Seder. And now the Sheni comes along, and he sits or stands behind the Rishon. So when the Rishon gets up, the Sheni is potter. So wait a second. So the Gemara says the following: here potter and mutter. And why is it mistaber to say that potter and mutter? Because in the Seifa, it says the following. Oh, lemazeh dome. In the case where the second fellow, that Shiva, he sits next to the Rishon, and he remains there even after Reuven packs out, and the Mishnah says that Shimon is potter, but then the Mishnah adds in the Seifa, lemazeh dome, meaning it gives us a metaphor, so to speak, it has some sort of an equation. Lenoel es beso leshomro, right? He's locking his door because he doesn't want any ganav to come in. And venimtzas tzvi shomer besocha, which implies that you're allowed to do this even lechatchila. And the Mishnah was saying that that's comparable to the case of Shimon after Reuven packs out. Michlal, we see that patur, when we say in the Mishnah about Shimon that he's patur, is potur mutur. It means that he's allowed to do what he's doing, meaning he's allowed to remain passively blocking the exit of the deer. Shema mino. Now, at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara actually quotes a member of Shmuel, if I'm not mistaken, that there are cases where the Mishnah says potur, but it means potur mutur. And it refers to the Mishnah. If you remember, the Mishnah speaks about a case where the Ani takes an object, stretches his arm out to the Baal HaBayis, or I should say his arm into the Rishus of the Baal HaBayis, and the Baal HaBayis is totally passive. And in that case, the Gemara says that Potur means Potur Mutter. So we see that whenever you're passive, that's Potur Mutter. Ika Diamri, some have a different version of this discussion here between Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak and Rabbi Abba, or Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Afanan Nami Tnina. Instead of a kasha from that Mishnah, Rav Nachman was proving the point of Rabbi Abba that passive tzedah is mutter from our Mishnah. What do we see in our Mishnah that would support Rabbi Abba, and that you're allowed to keep the cloak on, you know, tie tight in such a way that the bird will not be able to fly away? It says in our Mishnah, so when the first guy packs out and the second guy is now in effect trapping the deer, that's fine. And what does the word potu mean, my love? Doesn't the word potu mean potu mutter? And Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak already anticipates that from the Sefer, we're going to determine that in this case, the Sheni is mutter. So lo. So when the Gemara tries to reject the proof of Rav Nachman by saying, potu aval asa. So Rav Nachman comes back and he says, no. Hamiktoni Sefer, holomad, tovet, tovet, zelenol, beisol, shom, venimtsu, svi, shom, lusocho, michlal, de potu mutter, shmamino. That just like in a case where you're locking your door to protect it from the thieves, that's mutter, even though there's a tzvi, and the tzvi is going to be locked into your house. Omar Shmuel kol p'turi de Shabbos potu aval asa lebar mihani tlashe potu mutter. There are three exceptions to the rule, and in these three cases, the Mishnah used the word potu, but it means potu mutter. Chadaha. And one of the three cases of Shmuel is this case where the first guy was responsible for the tzedah, and when he leaves, the second guy who's there behind him is allowed to remain exactly where he's sitting. And the word potu in this Mishnah means potu mutter. Umimai, and the Gemara says, how do you know that potu mutter? Tiktani Seifa, once again, the third time. Lamaya Davidov Zom Domil and Noel is based on the Shomav and Imsa Tzvi Shomav Socho, and that's a case of mutter where you're allowed to lock your door in for security purposes, even though you'll have a deer that's locked inside. Now Shmuel said that there were three exceptions to the rule. What are the other two exceptions? The Idach, another exception, is Hamafis Mursa B'Shabbos, and the Brisa says that if you pluck this boil in order to let the pus go out of the boil, then Hiyapatu. Im La Sosol Pe, if on the other hand you're trying to open up an opening so the air could go in and heal the, you know, the sensitive area that's underneath the boil, so you expose that area to air, that's chayv. That's already called meleches bone, because you want to get the air going in, so you're really creating an opening for the air to go in. And there's binyan begufo shel adam, even when you structure something in the person's body, like for example braids in the hair, I think we spoke about it, that's also considered bone. The Gemara derives that from the pasuk Vayivan Hashem Elokim es Hatzela. And im lahotzi men alecha, but if on the other hand he's not interested in opening the boil, which is something that, let's say, if you go to a physician, you know, that's part of his professional expertise to open a boil. But instead, all you're interested in is getting out the lecha, so you pluck it, not open it, but you pierce it and allow the lecha, the infected pus in order to go out. Then it says potu. And Shmuel says then when it says potter here in this case, it means potter umutter. Now, why is it potter umutter? First, let's talk about a doraisa level. On a doraisa level, it's potter because there's no meleches bona here. He's not at all interested in opening up the Pesach. On the other hand, even though on a doraisa level there's no meleches bona, but nevertheless, we should have here a what's called a melacha sheinat tzricha legufa. What do I mean? That by opening this boil in such a way that the pus goes out of the boil, you've in effect created a Pesach. So even though that wasn't your interest, you just wanted to get the pus out, you weren't trying to get the air into the skin, so you had no interest in creating a binyan here, in opening opening up an entrance way, a Pesach. But nevertheless, we have a principle called malacha shein tzricha legufa. If you do a malacha, but you don't do it for the purpose that the malacha is done for, like the classic case where you take afar, and you're not interested in making a hole for planting, but you might be chayav for choresh, for preparing the ground for planting, because even though you had another purpose, you wanted to get the dirt in order to cover something, but nevertheless, you've created an opening which is called charisha for seeding. Now, Rabbi Yehuda's shita is that a melacha shein tzricha legufa is chayav, but we're going to accept the shita here of Rabbi Shimon that melacha shein tzricha legufa is potter aval aser. It's aser mirabbanan. So you and I might think that here too, in the case where he makes an opening in this boil, in this mursa, he is making an effective binyan. His interest is not in the binyan, he's interested in getting the lecha out. And that becomes a melacha shein tzricha legufa. Well, even if you hold like Rav Shimon, melacha shein tzricha legufa is potter aval aser. So Shmuel says, nein, in this case, potter means potter umutter. You're allowed to do it l'chatchila. Why? Because b'makom tzar lo gozru bei rabbana. That in a case of a melacha shein tzricha legufa, you're allowed to perform this melacha for the sake of avoiding tzar. So he's got this, you know, this pressure because the pus is building up in this very significant boil, and he's got to let out the pus in order to relieve himself of that suffering. And in such a case, the Rabbanan say it's mutter. Now, this really indicates that melacha shein tzricha legufa is more than just a what we call. Let me say it better. It's less than what we call a malacha derabbanan. Let me explain. A malacha derabbanan, if the rabbanan say that this is a malacha, then there's no heter for tzar. But you have something called a gzeira derabbanan. And a gzeira derabbanan is mutter b'makom tzar. In fact, I may have this. Let me see if I can, if by chance I can find this for you. This is a book from Rav Herschel Schechter called Eretz HaTzvi. And let's see if by chance, again, he's got 40 pieces here, so let's see if by chance I can find the one I'm looking for. One second, do I find it? I'm just going to do it very quick. I don't want to hold you up, but here it is. Page Nun. Okay. So he wants to know, what's the gedder? How do we define a malacha shein tzricha legufa according to Rabbi Shimon, which is potter aval aser? Is it a malacha derabbanan or is it a gzeira derabbanan? So he says that the nafkamina would be a case of tzar, or for example a cholah shein bo sakana. There are various cases where the rabbanan are willing to withhold the application of a gzeira of an enactment. But on a Malach and Rabbanan, they don't do so. So he quotes a sugya in Perek Bamei Madlikin, on Daf Chav Tes Amid Beis, and you want to put out a ner because it's bothering the eyes of a chole. I'm not talking about a chole sheish bo sakon, a chole sheim bo sakon. Now, kibui, for the sake of getting rid of the light, I mean, for that we'd have to learn about Mevad Likin, but that's called the Malach Hashem Tzricha Legufa. And yet, the Gemara says it's Asur for the sake of a chole. So it sounds like the Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa is a Malacha Derabbana. That's the implication of the Sugya of Kibbutz. However, Bereish Perek Shmona Shratzim, I don't know why he calls it Reish Perek Shmona Shratzim. In my book, it's the end of Perek HaOreg. Ah, okay, so this Gemara is going to come up a little later again. It says, Mutu Lachatchila Lahafis Murusa B'Shabbos, that was Shmuel, Kidei Lahotzi Men Alecha, Lecha, because of Mokum Tzar Lo Gozu Be Rabbana. So we seem to have a stira, kind of a contradiction. How do we define and classify a Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa? Is it a Malacha D'Rabbanan or a Gzeira D'Rabbanan? Now, Nafkavi is going to be B'Mokum Choli or B'Mokum Tzar. So the Meiri asks this kasha, and he says the Ikar Halacha Hu Kish Sugya, the Sugya that we're learning now, that Malach Shein Tzrich Legufa is Mutar B'Mokum Chola. Tieno Ela Toras Gzeira V'Lo Malacha D'Rabbanan V'Ada Asu L'Chavo Saner B'Shvil Achola. Says the Meiri, because that's not called a lerapos sachole. In other words, the only time the Rabbanan are going to allow b'mokom choli a loosening, or shall I say a relieving of the gzera, is only when you're doing an act of refuah. But putting out the light is not an act of refuah. It's just that, you know, the light is preventing the chola from sleeping, so you got to get rid of the light. That's not an etzem maisa ripui. All right, this is a conceptual breakthrough here, the Meiri, which would have to be studied. Now, in this article in Eretz HaTzvi, Rav Shechter tries to prove that the Shitas HaTosvis is just the opposite. That Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is a Malacha D'Rabbanan. It's not just a Gzera. Why? Because Tosvis says that Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is Eino Dumya De Mishkan. It's not similar to Mishkan. Which means that it has the status of a Malachas Machsheves. It's a creative act. It's a constructive act. But you're potter for a technical reason because it's not Dumya de Mishkan. So therefore, he says, according to Shitas HaTosvis, Ein lahatir malacha shein tzricha leguf makom choli. You would not be allowed to permit a violation of malacha shein tzricha leguf for the sake of a chole, and for that matter, for the sake of a makom tsar. So in that case, our sugya is really, really difficult. Because our sugya allows a violation of creating a Pesach in a mursa, in this boil, if it's a Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa and it's B'Makom Choli. So that combination gives you a Heter L'Chatchila. And the question is why? So he comes up with a thesis here that that it depends upon whether you're violating an Av Malacha or a Tolda. So he says that in the case of a Tolda, if it's an Enet Tzricha L'Gufa, that's only Gzeira D'Rabbanan. If you violate an Av Malacha in a Malacha Shen Tzricha L'Gufa, that's already a Malacha D'Rabbanan. So now he tries to work it out that Mechaves HaNer, that's already an Av Malacha. Just that he's not doing it for the same purpose, he just wants to make sure it's dark for the Chola. So that becomes a Malacha Shen Tzricha L'Gufa, which is a Malacha D'Rabbanan. And that would not be mutter for the sake of a chola. But in the case of Mafis Mursa, this is not really a Maleches Bona per se. You know, Bona means when you put structure, you know, you put pieces together, you know, a beam here and a beam here, and you attach them. Here he's not doing that at all. He's just creating a Pesach. That would be a tolda of Maleches Bona. And in the case of a tolda, if it's a Maleches Shen Tzricha L'Gufa, then that's considered a gzera d'rabbanon and not a malach d'rabbanon. Therefore, b'makom tsar lo gozu b'rabbon. Okay, I'm just, you know, this is obviously a
big topic.
Yeah, big topic. Yeah, I mean the article itself is about 20 pages long. I just pulled out one paragraph.
Right.
In any event, getting back to our Gemara. So the Gemara says that umimai de potu mutter, and how do we know that in this case of mafis mursa, the word potu means it's mutter? Disnan, because we have a Mishnah later on that says l'chatchila you're allowed to remove a machat shel yad. So you have a needle that is used and designated for sewing. And litol bas hakotz, you want to use it to remove a thorn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, removing a thorn is itself a meleches heter. But the only problem is that this machat is a kli shemalachto le'iser, because it's designated for sewing purposes. Now, when it says machat lito bas hakotz, it means l'chatchila you're allowed to take this machat in order to remove the thorn that's in your finger or wherever it is. Now, if the Mishnah allows you to be metaltel a machat for the sake of removing a kotz, then you see that it's allowing it l'chatchila. And the reason for that is because apparently he's suffering from this thorn. Okay, fine. So now he writes the following: Atam she'eno over b'kach al meleches bona, af shebona pesach l'shem otzas hakotz. See, this is a chiddush. He's saying that in order to remove the thorn, he's got to create an opening. And that's what he's going to do with this machat. But he doesn't need the opening. And for his part, as soon as he gets the thought out, let it close up. He's only creating an opening in order to get the coats out. But not because he wants a permanent opening here in his arm or wherever it is. So that's called a malach shen tzricha l'gufa. And for the sake of tsar, because this thorn is pressing into his body, we allow him l'chatchila to take out the thorn. So you see that a malach shen tzricha l'gufa in a case of makom tsar is mutter even l'chatchila, and therefore the word potter here in the case of mafis mursa lo tzimen lecha means potter mutter. The idach. Okay, now we said that there are three times in the Mishnah, Shmuel says, where potter means potter mutter. One is this case where the second guy is left passively closing the opening of the entranceway of his house so that the tzvi can't go out, and that's potur mutur. Then we had the case of mafis mursa. Now we have a third case. Hatzad nachash b'shabes im esasik bo shalo yishacheru potur v'im lirafua chayov. Okay, so what happens now? There's a serpent, and he's going to capture the serpent. Why is he capturing the serpent? Two possibilities. One is he's trying to save his life, you know, protect himself. And the other is that he wants to sell the snake to a zookeeper, to the zoo. Or, in this case, he wants to use it for a fua. Now, what is he going to do with a snake for a fua? We know that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, put up a snake on top of the thing, but that's not what we're talking about here.
That's
right. So I'm not sure, but I have two possible answers to this question. One is that they actually could remove the venom of a snake and use it for medicinal purposes if someone were bitten by a snake. I don't know.
Right.
The other possibility is that the Gemara says that if you have boils, then if you can't take a snake, I mean, the Gemara has all sorts of conditions. It's got to be a white snake with a black snake. You know, he's got to cook it together, but he can use it for medicinal purposes, and it's therapeutic for a boil. Now here it says that if he's only trying to defend, you know, protect himself, that the snake shouldn't attack him, he's potter. Because he has no interest in seder. Yet seder means I want to take the animal. He's not trying to take the animal, he's just trying to protect himself from the animal. So what does the word potter mean? Says Shmuel, potter means potter umutter. Umimai de potter umutter. Tisnan, it says in the Mishnah later on, Kofin ka'ara alaner b'shvil shalotechos ba'kora, that if you have a bowl that's made of earthenware and you have a lamp that's lit and you're afraid that the flame is too high, it might burn down the house, then you're allowed to take a bowl, which is again in this case of cheres, and you can turn it upside down on top of the flame, and again, he's going to be mechaber the ner, he's going to put it out, but he's not interested in the kibbutz per se, he's just interested in making sure that the house doesn't burn down. Another example, the Mishnah has al hatsoa. One second, al hatsoa shel katan the al akra of shalot tishach. So he has a list of cases here where the Mishnah says, Kofin, you're allowed to do this. And in the case of Tzoa Sheltarnagolim, is Rashi says that he's afraid that a katan might come and play with it if you have filth on the ground, so you're allowed to cover it with a kara, with this bowl, and that's going to prevent the katan from coming along and, you know, getting all, you know, come in contact with this filth. And then we have the third case, which I think is the case most relevant to us, and that's al akrav. Now we're talking about a live animal, a scorpion in this case. And before we were talking about covering a lamp that's lit, or soa. That's not tseda. I mean, in no way he's not violating the Isser of tseda. So more or less what we're dealing with here are issues of mukta. But in the third case, the ala akrov, when he covers a live scorpion with a bowl, he is in effect trapping the scorpion. And that's already a malacha of tzeda. We're not talking about muktzah anymore. Now, in one breath, the Braisa has, I should say, a Mishnah has all three cases, and the opening law, the opening word in the Mishnah is kofin, and the word kofin implies that you're allowed to do this lechatchila, that it's perfectly mutter. So you see clearly that you're allowed to capture an animal in order to prevent yourself from getting bitten by that animal because of the tsar, even though it's a malacha shein tzrichel gufa, which is pata avalasa. So you see that the word potter here in our context must mean potter mutter, and the reason why it's mutter is because of v'makom tzar. Okay, this brings us to the next Mishnah, which begins a parak called Shmona Shrotzim. I think it's parak number 14. And here, if I have it somewhere, I want to give you a list of the Shmona Shrotzim, the eight Shrotzim. But let's see if I can find the right translation. This is a parasha in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph, which I think is Parsha Shmini. Don't quote me on that. Let's see. Yeah, I think I have it. Okay. Okay. So first I'll read it to you in Hebrew.
Okay,
and then we'll read it in English.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have here the following. It says, "V'zelachem atomei b'sheretz hashoritz ala oretz." These are the following shrotzim, which are prohibited, non-kosher shrotzim. And if you were Yemenite from the old country, although there are very few left, you'd have to know this because they eat grasshoppers and stuff like
right,
that.
You know,
so
yeah.
They have to know which are the eight that are prohibited by the Torah. Okay, and it starts with something called a choled. So the English translation of choled by Rashi translates it into French as a moshtila. So now you're from Quebec, right? So you would probably know this.
No,
I'm from
Toronto.
Oh, so wait, your sister lives in Quebec? I always forget.
Yeah,
oh, I always get confused.
She's in Montreal. I only after she got married.
Yeah. All right, so we don't know French, although some of the Torontonians know a little bit of French. But I don't know, this is old French anyway.
Right.
So in French, it's M-O-S-T-E-L-E.
Okay.
In old French. And in modern English, it's called a weasel. And that's the shita most Rishonim. The Ramban has the shita that a choled is a rat. Okay. I hope we don't get into too close to corona stuff here. Anyway. Number two is an achbar. That we know is a mouse. And then we get to a tsav. And Rashi identifies this again in Old French as a froyot, or as a boat reel. So froyot is F-R-O-I-T, and boutriol is B-O-T-E-R-E-L. And apparently, in modern English, this is called a lizard, also known as a ferret, but I'm not pronouncing that right, F-E-R-R-E-T.
Yeah, ferret.
Okay, so I don't know exactly what a ferret is, but it's probably something similar to a lizard. But at least we know what it's called in Old French, so we're okay. Right? Then we have Hanukka. Again, Rashi says in French, it's called a Hiritsun, which is spelled H-E-R-I-C-O-N. And in modern French, it's called a hedgehog or a porcupine. The Radak, however, identifies it as a beaver. Then we have a Koach, which is again a certain specific type of a lizard. We have a litoa, which is also a lizard, and we have a chomet, which is something that grows inside a shell. Probably it's a snail. So we have various types of lizards. And give me a second, Ira. Maybe. So the last of the eight is Tinshemes in the Pasuk, which Rashi again gives us a French word, Talpa, which is T-A-L-P-E. And that's a mole. Again, some sort of a mole, which makes it a little bit more similar maybe to the rat or to the mouse. But Rav Sadia identifies it as another type of lizard. So really you have to take a crash course in lizards here in order to get down the eight shrotzim which the Torah prohibits. So now, let me give you, the Masifta gives us a little bit of a background to this parak, an introduction. He says that this parak should be divided into three parts. The first of which is Tzedah, and we're going to talk about Tzedah in the case of Shmoneh Shrotzim. And the second is going to be Derabbanans, various kinds of Melachos which Derabbanan prohibited, because they look similar to a Melacha Doraisa. And finally, the third of this parak is dedicated to Melachos that are Suros because of Refuah. And the Rabbanan instituted Gzeira that we're not allowed to use refuah therapeutic methods on Shabbos. So the next part of his introduction is the list of Shmoneh Shrotzim. And these Shmoneh Shrotzim are included in the parasha of what's called Tumas Nevela, that sometimes a living creature generates Tumah when it dies. And that's called the Sheretz. So, for example, if you have a dead sheretz and you come in contact with a dead sheretz, which is called tumas mago, and also we have to know about carrying a sheretz, that's a whole different story, that's called tumas maso, is then in the case of these eight shrotzim that are listed by the Torah, their dead body, their nevela, generates tumah. Anything beyond that, if you have other shrotzim, then they don't have a din of tumah in their nevela. Our Mishnah is going to indicate that even for Shabbos, we have a special din that applies to all shrotzim that's different than the law that applies to the eight shrotzim. And the nafka mina in Shabbos is going to be in terms of what's called chovel. Now, chovel, I always use the mashal of a black and blue mark, right? So if somebody hits you very hard, chas v'shalom, the skin, because of broken blood capillaries, will turn blue, or whatever color it turns, called black, blue, whatever. It's a different colors. Now the strange thing is that in such a case, although you didn't kill anybody, so, you know, this cannot come under Meleches Notel Nethils Neshama Lechora, but you did dye something, D-Y-E, not D-I-E, but D-Y-E, because the blood and the broken capillaries that coagulate here underneath the skin, they actually change the color of your skin. But in the case of Shrotzim, you don't really dye the skin, because the skin is a very thin membrane. So it's not what you'd call a permanent black and blue mark. But herein lies the difference between the Shmoneh Shrotzim and all other Shrotzim. Shmoneh Shrotzim amurim b'Torah hatzadon v'chovel b'hen chayav. So with regard to these Shmoneh Shrotzim, if you capture them alive, then you are guilty and liable for Meleches Tzedah. And if you injure them, then you are guilty of Meleches Tzoveah. Why? Because these Shmoneh Shrotzim have a thick skin, and the blood coagulates between the basar and the ar, between the flesh of the animal and the skin, and that creates a tseva, changes the color of the ar, and therefore he's going to be chayav. And the reason why these eight shrotzim are isolated or singled out is because of a principle called yesh b'mino nitzot, that it's quite common for people to capture these kinds of creatures, and that makes it into a malacha tzricha l'gufa. That means it's a real tzedo because you need it, and in such a case you'd be chayav midin tzedo. So let's talk about the animal being alive, and you're able to capture the animal. If you capture the animal, since it's yesh b'mino nitzon, you'll be chayav from maleches tzedo. Now, what happens if, in addition to capturing it, the animal alive, you're also chovel b'hem? You know, you give it a real smack, and the dam didn't come out, but the dam is coagulated underneath the skin. So that might be a malach of tzovea. Now here, he says that a chovo behen. So 1 second. Keva di. This is Rashi has two lashonos. We were interpreting this mishnah according to Rashi's second lashon, which is called lishna achrina. Kavon, about seven lines down from the top of the Rashi, Kavon, sheyesh lehem or, nitzba ha'or, the skin of this thick-skinned animal becomes dyed, D-Y-E-D, bedam ha'nitzar bo, because of the dam that coagulates underneath the skin, v'chayav mishum tzoveah. That's Rashi's second interpretation. In Rashi's first interpretation, he says that this is a told of shochet. Now, in order to appreciate that, I mean, tzeda I understand because he captured the animal tzeish b'mino nitzon. Where's the shochet over it? Just because he gave it, you know, a clap on the animal. But the answer is ki adam hu anefesh, that the blood itself is identical, according to halacha, with the life of the animal. So by taking this blood out of the circulatory system, you're killing that blood. And killing that blood is itself called shochet or netilas neshama. That's Rashi's first interpretation. Let me just see if he has a footnote here. He says, even though the dam didn't come out, but nitzra adam, that's we saw. Vishuvein achozer. That's important. It's not that the blood is temporarily caught underneath the skin, but rather, and that it's going to return into the circulatory system, but rather it's permanently removed from the system. No oxygen. It's going to be it's dead blood. Okay, that's Rashi's first pshat. It's interesting. You see, at the end of the first pshat, he writes Livia. Do you see that? My daughter's name is Livia, but she spells it with a vet, not a vav. So I'm not sure. Livia apparently is Rashi's rebbe. But it's Rashi Tefis for something. All right, later on, if I have time, I don't want to waste that time. There's a whole discussion about this in the back of the Masifta that's called Biurei Rashi. But and Chayiv Mishum Netilas Neshama Lo Tzos Dam B'Mokom Shechoval Bo Mishum SheNetilas Dam, which means killing the blood and taking it out of the circulatory system, Nechshav Netilas Neshama. That's considered like Netilas Neshama. And he quotes the pasuk that I mentioned earlier, Ki Adam Hu Anefesh in Dvarim Yud Beis. Aval shar shrotzim patur. What about others beyond these eight? Mishum she'ein lehem or. They don't really have a skin. They just have like a membrane that covers their outsides. And she yitzava me'adam. So there's nothing that's getting colored by the dam. Again, that fits in a lot better with Rashi's second interpretation, that he's chayiv mishum dying because he colors the or, but these other shrutzim don't have an or. If you're learning, it's because he's taking the blood out of the circulatory system. I'm hard-pressed to know why that shouldn't apply to other shrutzim. All right. Now it says, Ushar shkotzim v'rmasim, we're back to the Mishnah, which are not included in Tumas Nevela. For example, you could have snakes, and you could have scorpions, and you could have worms of different sorts. Yisachovil bahen patur. These don't have a thick skin, and you cannot say about these other creatures that nitzar adam, that the dam is stuck there underneath the skin, because lo nekar adam mimkoma, v'sofo lachzor l'kadmusa. In these cases, even if you give it a bang, the blood is eventually going to go back and return into the circulatory system. However, hatsadon, let's say you can have some medicinal value from capturing a certain kind of a serpent, or I know in the case of a scorpion, again, if you chasham get bit by scorpions, it's always worthwhile getting a hold of the scorpion. They can make an antidote from the venom of the scorpion itself. So he captures the scorpion and he needs the scorpion. Well, let's say he captures a snake and he wants to sell it to a zoo. Is chayev. Then he's chayev for meleches tzedah. But shalolit tzorech, if he doesn't need the animal, in other words, he's just trying to protect himself from a ferocious animal that might attack him, potur. In such a case, it's called a melacha shenitzricha legufa, and this Mishnah, like the previous Mishnah, reflects the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Chayev yov sheberchuso, if let's say he domesticates an animal, hatsadon potur. Why? Because since they're domesticated, they always come back to nest, you know, they return to their home base, and therefore that's already called nitzo. It's already naturally in a state of tzeda. It's an ongoing state of being trapped. V'chol ben chayev, but however, they do have a thick skin, and therefore if you beat them up, the blood gets stuck underneath the skin, and therefore he's chayev mishum meleches shochet, or alternatively mishum meleches tzoveya, because he's coloring the skin. So the Gemara now is going to be medayik from the Mishnah that all the eight shrutzim that are mentioned in the Torah have an R, and that's going to reflect the sheet of one of the Tanoim. Midikatani, from the fact that it says Shmona Shrotzim Achov Ben Chayov, even though the blood didn't come out, but Yechayv Fachavol Mechal De Islu Or, it must be because there's a skin, and as we said before, the blood comes underneath the skin, penetrates the skin, and that's where it's trapped for ever and ever. Mantana, who's the Tana who holds that this is what's unique and common to the eight Shrotzim? Amar Shmuel Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nurihi. Disnan, we have a Mishnah at the end of Chulin, and the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri Omer, Shmona Shrotzim Amurim B'tor Yeshlam Oros. He commits himself to this position that the eight categories of Shrotzim that are mentioned in the Torah in the Parsha Nevelas Tuma, all are common. They have these skins, and it's not just some sort of covering membrane, it's a real skin. And he goes on to say, that's already more the Tum and Tara aspect, that the Oros themselves are not mitamim. They cannot convey Tuma. Only the Basa Nevela can create Tuma. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, and they hold that some of the Shrotzim do not have an Or. And that's why Oroseim are mitamim. It's instead of called an R, it's called Basar, and in those cases, and we'll you know, Bli Neder, we'll have to see which of the eight are on that list. You have Hanoka, Koach, Halota, and Chomet. In those cases, there is no R, according to the Chachamim. And if there's no R, it's called Basar, and if it's Basar, it's Metame. So the so-called R in these four cases of those Shratzim, which again, we call them an R, but it's not really an R Alpi Din, those have the status of Basar. And now, in those four cases, according to the Chachamim, Hachovel Bahem Potter, because just like Shar Shrotzim, we said, don't have an R, and therefore there's no Chiyuv for Machabel, for Chovel, so too in the case of these four Shrotzim, that according to Rabbanan, don't have an R. Is Nechleku Tanoim B'Mishnah, there in Chulin, Legabi Oroseim Shel Chelek Mishmonis HaShrotzim Murim B'Torah, Hanoka Va'akoach va'alota va'achomet ha'imem mitamim kibesorim olok ha'chom sovshem mitamim kibesorim. It's not or, but it's basar. And Rabbi Yochanan Nuri sover ein mitamim kibesorim, because he holds that they all have an or, and the or is separate from the basar. And the Torah only says basar nevela is mitami, not or of nevela. There's a third shita in Chulin of Rabbi Yehuda. He holds that the or of Hanukkah v'Koach v'Chomet is mitami kibsaram, but he disagrees in the case of halata, some sort of a lizard. Now, at this point in the sugya, the Gemara understood that the machlokas about Shmona Shrotzim is, do they have R, do they not? And Rabbi Yochanan Nuri says that what's common to all eight Shrotzim is they have an R. Therefore, their R is not mitame. The Chachom hold that four out of the eight have no R, and therefore their R, so to speak, in inverted commas, is mitame kibosar. And the Gemara now says that according to Rav, and until now we had Shmuel, but Rav has a different take on this, and he holds that the machlokas there in Chulin has nothing to do with Shabbos at all, it only has to do with Tumah. Rav Barav Hunom Rav Afilu Tema. Even if you want to say that our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbanon, and there are amongst the list of the eight Shratzim some that have R that's metami kibasar. Adkan lo pligi. Rabbanan alei de Rabbi Yochanan alinyan tuma. They hold that the R of those four are metami kibasar dichsiv, based on the pasuk there again in Vayikra Yud Aleph. After the Torah lists the four, the eight shrotzim, it says ele hatmeim lachem, and you have a hey in the word hatmeim, which is an extra superfluous hey, lerabos sha'oroseim kibisorim, that in four cases the hey is teaching us that their skins are amitami like basar, but they do have or all eight. And therefore, in Yin Shabbos, Hafilu Rabbanim Modu, even the Chacham Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri agree that Achovu Bahem Chayev in all eight Shrotzim. So the Gemara asks Akasha from a Braisa. In Yin Shabbos Lo Pligi, are you telling me that there's no machlokes between Rabbanim Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri Ben Achovel in four cases? Vatanya, we have a Braisa that says, Hatzad Echad Mishmona Shrotzim Amurim B'Torah, O Achovel Bahem Chayev, Tirei Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is telling us in any of the eight cases that are listed in the Torah of those Shrotzim, if you are Chovel Bahem, since they have an R, therefore you violate Meleches Chavola. V'chachamim Omrim, Ein R, Elo L'mashem Manu Chachamim. So now we're going to turn to Daf Kuv Zayin Amid Beis. And in the Mishnah in Chulin Adaf Kufchav Beis, there's a list of Shrotzim that have an R that has the din of Basar, and those are the Anoka, the Koach, the Alta, and the Chomet. And those are the ones that Chachamim hold have the status of R Kibasar. And we asked a question from the Braisa, and the Braisa is what we call Mishubeshes. It's not a reliable Braisa. And you cannot interpret the Chachamim Kipshuta, the Direi Chacham Kipshuta, because from their words, it would seem that the Shrotzim that the Chachamim listed in the Mishnah have or mamish, adarabba. Lemasha manu Chachamim ein lahem or. The Chachamim listed those that don't have an or, and that's why their or has the status, the din of basar. Okay, and now we have the opposite in the Mishnah. How do we reconcile this contradiction in the Mishnah and the Braisa? Omar Abaye, Abaye wants to reinterpret the Braisa. It doesn't mean literally Kipshuto b'divrei Chachamim. Hachi koma. This is what the Braisa means to say. Ein ar cholok mi basar, ela lemasha lomanu Chachamim. So according to the Braisa, ein din ha'or cholok mi ha'basar, when we separate the or from the basar, as far as tuma, eladafka larba shrotzim shalomanu chachomim b'mishnah. Those are the other four, the balance, not the ones that are listed in the Mishnah. Shehem ha'cholid v'akbar v'atzov v'atinsomes. Their or is not metami like basar because they don't really have an or mamish. Therefore, achovo ben b'shabbos. I'm sorry. Their or is not like basar because their or is mamish or, and therefore, number one, it's not metami. Number two, achovo ben b'shabbos chayev. But the shrotzim that are listed by the chachamim in the Mishnah, which the anoka, the koach, the alta, and the chomet, their or is metami kibasar. They don't really have an R, and if Achol Ben B'Shabbos Potur, because there's no coagulation and coloring of the R, or removal of the dam from the system. According to this, we have a difficulty with Rav, because Rav says, according to Chachamim, Yochayef Achovel in all eight Shrotzim. The Braisa clearly says that in four out of the eight Shrotzim that are listed in the Mishnah, the Chachamim hold Achol Ben Shabbos Potur. Now, Rava rejects, at this point, the answer of Abaye, and he wants to reinterpret the Braisa in a different way, so that it's not difficult according to Rav. Amale Rava ham lema shemonu chachomim ka'amar. When the Tanna says in the Braisa, lema shemonu chachomim, it means that you cannot say that the Braisa has in mind lema shalomanu chachomim, those who are not listed, because the Tana is not going to make a mistake between those that are listed and those that are not listed. This is what the Braisa has in mind. Based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, it would seem that only as far as Shabbos is concerned, there's a din that the R of all the Shmona Shrotzim is considered R. And Yochai, but Linyan Tuma, he would agree that we're going to derive from the Pasuk HaTmeim that the R is Metami Kibasar. And on that, the Chachamim made a comment, Ein R Metami Kibasar, Lemashem Manu Chachamim in the Mishnah in Chulin. Shrotzim that are not included in the list enumerated by the Mishnah in Chulin of the Chachamim, then the R is not Metami Kibasar. And then disagreeing as far as Tum is concerned, but as far as Shabbos is concerned, the Chacham also agree that Mode, that there's a din R for all eight Shrotzim, and if Achovu Bahen Chayev, as we saw in Rav, that the Chachamim only disagree with Rav Yochanan ben Nuri Linyan Tumah, but they admit as far as Shabbos is concerned. So the Gemara now raises a question on Rav's answer, Michlal. It would seem from the Divrei Chachamim that if they said that the R is not Metami Kibasar, except for that which was listed by the Chachamim, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Sover, apparently he holds, Hanach Nami, even those Shrotzim, Delo Manu Chacham, which are not listed in the Mishnah, or Oseam Metamim Kibasar, V'Hak Tani, but it says in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, Shmona Shrotzim Yeshlem Oros, which means, as far as their oros is concerned, lo mitamim kibasar. So we cannot interpret that the chachamim in the Braisa as Rav would have interpreted. So Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow Shia here on Kuf Zayin Amid Beis, we'll do a little bit of a Chazara because we're really heavy in the middle of the Sugya here. But officially what we're up to is Amar of Ada Bar Masna, which is almost at the beginning of the wide lines here. I would say it's about 10 lines down from the top. On Daf Kuf Zayin Amid Beis.